DW Africa Link.
For decades, traditional media controlled the narrative. Artificial intelligence, AI, and social media are rewriting the rules. AI is creating the threat of a new digital divide, a term that refers to the gap between individuals who can access the tools and resources to afford them and those who cannot. This divide extends to media enterprises who are able to make the necessary technology investments and those who cannot, as well as to groups who profit from the power of AI while being protected by meaningful rules and those for whom neither is the case. From deepfakes to AI-generated news, who controls the truth? Is this a revolution in power or just another disruption? That's what's coming up. Stay tuned. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Welcome to the AI revolution, where we explore how artificial intelligence is reshaping media, journalism, and public trust. Currently, several news organizations and networks are developing and presenting guidelines and principles on the use of AI in media and journalism. Faced with fast-paced developments in AI, the media development sector must gain traction in its response in various fields. The future of information is here, but are we ready for it? For a broader discussion on this, DW Africa, in partnership with Zambia's QTV, we bring you this special edition podcast. QTV Talu Mukupa speaks to a panel of experts, Peter Limbok, Director General DW, a leading voice in international media, Richard Mulonga, CEO Bloggers Zambia, a pioneer in digital media, Stu Relatable, writer and poet, a creative influencer, and Reverend Walter Mwambazi, an author and digital marketer, a thought leader in digital marketing.
Okay, so let's get started. I'll start off with something very simple. AI revolution. How would you take it? How would you understand it? How would you relatable to our country right now, to our platforms right now, to basically the media? What's your take from it when you just hear AI revolution?
I think it goes back to when we were younger and there were all those things and conversations where they talk about the robots are coming or the robots are going to take over one day. And I think when you talk about the AI revolution, it means that we are now in a state where there are new tools that are being utilized to ensure that content reaches the masses. So it's not just the traditional media that we're used to, but it's also these other tools that are being used in marketing and television and media that are now shaping or changing the landscape. So I think the AI revolution is something that has slowly gained progression, and I think it's also managed to now start penetrating the Zambian market and the Zambian media, because we see that, especially as content creators, as journalists, we're seeing that in our work, and we're seeing how it is changing the landscape and how conversations and algorithms are being manipulated to suit certain narratives. So the AI revolution is here, and that's what we're discussing here. It's either we're going to embrace it or we're going to fight it, but whether we like it or not, it's here, and Zambia is also part of it.
For me, AI is the final frontier before what we call a singularity. I know that's jargon, but hey, we're talking AI, so they'll just have to deal with it. So what is this final frontier? Every time in history, we've had what we term events that completely transform life as we know it. They're so impactful that they completely change life. And we've had, I think, three. I don't believe in evolution, but for the sake of the conversation, let's go with it. So the first singularity was language. The moment primates were able to communicate in complex words, that in itself completely transformed life as known. The second biggest singularity in history, in my opinion, was the printing press. Because the printing press made knowledge worldwide, but at least it was printable. So all of a sudden, the one book that everybody was keeping close to themselves, i.e. the Bible, was now available to everybody. And you realize that within 50 to 100 years of the printing press, we had the Renaissance. And the Renaissance is really nothing but the increase in knowledge and the ability to now question the authorities that came with all sorts of information concerning what's right and what's wrong. The third singularity, if you ask me, is the internet. Because the internet just, I mean, I can't even begin to explain how crazy the, I mean, imagine in my lifetime, we have stuff people haven't even heard of, like a cassette tape. Now, I asked my daughter the other day, you know, this used to have music in it. And she's like, where's the place to plug the headphone? I'm like, no, you need to put it in the player. It's so revolutionary. Just imagine. And we're talking in under what? 30 years, isn't it? Just cassette tapes were here 30 years ago. So that's the internet for you. It's completely just. So now I believe the fourth one is AI. Because AI is completely changing everything we know about data, information, and how we interact with it. I mean, simple example of a deep fake. The other day I watched a deep fake of Vusi, Tembikwai, a well-known speaker, talking about investing in crypto. I was like, okay, this is just another level. And for the average person out there, you come across that, you don't know it's fake, you can't know it's fake.
And I'm gonna stop you right there because you've touched on a lot of things, and this will lead me to you, Peter. So how would you say AI has transformed the way international journalism is being done at DW with all this, you know, deep fakes and the like?
Well, it hasn't transformed it yet, but it will transform it. So I think we're just in the starting process. First of all, what comes to us, which is a lot of fakes, a lot of fake videos, fake voices. So people from whatever background, normally populists or governments, try to falsificate our offers. So that they take our credibility to make other people believe wrong things. So this is something which AI is unfortunately very helpful. So you can really produce videos which are will be very hard to really see whether they're false or not. So we need measures to counter this, but this is another topic. And the other thing is how we will produce in the future in the newsrooms and beyond. And their AI is a chance to make journalism better, but it also is a huge danger because people rely on AI, and AI is still hallucinating. So if you use it, there is some fantasy coming out. So we at DW, we say at the beginning of an AI process, which we experiment with in different branches of the company, there must also be a journalist to control what has been done. And I think it's great to have it in the company to, let's say, mine the content which we have, to really dig deep in what we have into the company and then use it and have it really present. So make the archives live. So you can do a lot of great things with it, but it's dangerous. We have to control it because it's our credibility. DW is not the biggest company in the world, but it's a huge media outlet, and we live from our credibility, so AI must be controlled.
Stu, you are a storyteller,
yeah,
and a lot of people follow you because of the way you tell your stories. I do have to ask, with people in that specific field, poetry, authors, writers, how does it make you feel that AI is taking over, that some people are not even going the extra mile to be creative? All they do is put in a sentence and AI writes the entire story.
Yeah, I think there's quite a thin line between originality and what has been processed using AI. So one of the things that AI has done for the creative space is that it's made it easy for everybody to be expressive, in that all you have to do, like you said, is punch in something into your search, and then it pops up. So you find that people like us who have depended on our creativity to flourish are under attack, if I might say, because our creativity is now being challenged. We are fighting with computers, and the only problem that I can say that AI brings when it comes to storytelling is that it removes that human touch when it comes to how our stories are presented to the media, to the public. So you find that as creatives, one thing I can say is that AI, I'm not saying it's bad at all, because even I myself as a creative use it. There are things that I would never have imagined doing if I did not understand AI. For instance, marketing strategies have become so much easier because it helps me come up with content, it helps me align my thoughts, and it also helps me come up with things that I would never have thought of before. But the problem also is that you have a lot of people, especially online, news vloggers, bloggers, who just put things out there that are so computerized. You can tell that there was not a touch of humanity into this, because they want people to see words and feel like, oh, this person is so smart, but they do not understand that there's some certain humanity, there's certain creativity that comes with you writing and putting your craft into words. So I think in the creative space, AI has done amazing for us because it's now easier for us to also read, understand, and research on topics that we would not have understood before. But now also it's taking a lot from us because I am competing with every Jack, Jim, Mavuto out there to produce content, and it becomes a little bit frustrating at times.
Oh, wow. Okay, I hear you. A big part that's discussed when it comes to social media is people, mostly young people, even adults sometimes, being irresponsible, unethical, some of them in big leadership roles. You know, that conversation, it's been on the platform, and that a lot of people would say social media is not bad, it's how you use it. Mm. If you use it in a bad way, it makes it bad. And I'm guessing with AI coming into play, it's the same thing. Reverend, this one's to you. How can people use AI responsibly, ethically, especially those in leadership roles, especially those that are sources of information?
Mm. You know, it's one of those situations that's a double-edged sword. Mm. And it all goes back to regulation. Professionals like lawyers, accountants are all regulated. Why? Because they have to operate within these ethical parameters and borderlines. Unfortunately, the internet is, as we say in the local colloquial, in Chinyamachina, because it's just out there. I mean, take, for instance, traditional media, as you say, which is, you know, broadcast in terms of television and radio. Those were easy to regulate because you have an authority that regulates them, the IBA, I don't know what that stands for, but they regulate these guys. Now, you now have this phenomenon of podcasts. I mean, look at what we're transmitting right now. We're not using any of those platforms. We are going directly to the internet. The internet is not owned by anyone. Yes, nations can switch off the, you know, portals that connect us, but technically it's not owned by them either. So that renders the IBA completely useless. And so the only ones who could bring some form of regulation would be the platforms themselves. Now, in the past, we've had problems. You remember Facebook went into the whole, I mean, during that era, I can't mention the name, that era brought about two netizens. You had the pro thingy thingy, I will mention, and the anti thingy thingy. And it was so bad because you had very strong opinions on both sides. And for the other side, they even had all the international organizations in support. So there was a whole thing where these were being branded as evil, bad people because they're not taking whatever. And then you had channels now. So Facebook, YouTube, if you remember, would literally ban platforms and individuals that were seen as propagating what they called false information. And then those went over to new platforms like Rumble. Rumble was born and grew because of that. And now you have a whole demographic on Rumble, and they call them the truth tellers. But are they really truth tellers? I mean, take, for example, Andrew Tate. I don't think he has any platform, does he? He's been banned on everything. But he's got a huge following. So now the question is he right in what he says or not? So it's more now subjective. Even when you say ethics, from whose angle? Is it ethics from your angle, my angle?
Yeah.
So it's a really landmine field. It's eggshells, it's crazy. So I don't even know how it will be regulated.
Can I say something in relation to the conversation we had also about ethics and also tying it up with AI? One thing that AI has done is it has doubled or almost tripled the amount of content that's created in a short amount of time. So that means that our thoughts, our activities, how we view the world are also being directly influenced by algorithms that are brought forth by AI. So for instance, when you are on social media, the things that are usually given volume or things that are usually given precedent are things that sometimes are just being pushed by the majority. Mm. So you find that because of so much content and so much competition, because we do not have traditional media competing at the speed that content creators or social media people are producing content, you find that at the end of the day, this means that the people who are producing the most content are the ones who have a voice on what's actually on the ground. Mm-hmm. And now it means that minority voices are silenced. Conversations about how things impact us are decided by algorithms, which just keep on putting things into our faces. So you find like 1 minute you search something, for instance, on Facebook, and 10 minutes later, each and every article you read, there's also this problem where there are certain individuals who are so popularized, it's become so frustratingly annoying that every 2 minutes, it's the same individual from different angles. And because people want to be the ones to break the news, it ends up being that the people who are breaking the news are bringing in deceit, lies, they're not researching. That means that at the end of the day, they want to get numbers because platforms are now monetized. So it's become such a dirty job, and also AI has a lot, I think, to add to that narrative.
Sorry for budging in, but just on what she's raised, very critical. You know, the creators of these platforms, they hired the top experts in neuropsychology and social behavior. And these guys have PhDs in this thing. So they sat down to do a proper study on what can make the platforms engaging. Because I don't know the term, but I think it's stickability. Yeah? What do they call it? The one where how long somebody stays on a platform. Yes, that's called stickability. So they had to figure how do you make that happen? So they realized that, if you remember in traditional media, there's that saying, if it bleeds, it leads, right? So bad news, for some reason, unfortunately, always piques interest, that far more than positive good news. So it has been known that if you put something controversial, more people will react. And if they react, then the algorithm learns that, oh, this is what people are interested in.
Yeah.
And then it will now go and then create a whole timeline.
FYU page.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it will now begin to serve that. So what's scary about that is that at one point it was a big deal because Cambridge Analytica used it to influence elections in countries. And there was a whole court case around that. But it proved that you can shift an entire nation's perception of something or someone by simply tweaking with Google search engines and the AI algorithms on the social platforms.
And
so it's
I hear you. It's very, very scary. And which brings me to Peter, because now we have this issue of sensationalized reporting, and most traditional media houses or companies or organizations are known to stick to what they know, which is when we're giving you news, we'll give it to you, in a lack of a better term, blunt, because we're not supposed to show you our emotion.
Much
we're allowing blunt. You to give us your emotion. So how is DW handling that, where news reaching your audience, when it's other smaller pages or the unverified platforms decide to over-sensationalize and people would rather look at that as opposed to what's actually real and authentic?
I mean, we are not an entertainment company. But we also don't want to be boring.
Yes.
Journalism doesn't mean automatically that it has to be boring when it's true or when it's fact-based. But we say we are fact-based, and what all that has been said is right. The problem with social media is that it's not working for people who are only mainly interested in facts, because it really is driven by emotion. And honestly, not the best emotions.
Yeah.
So it's not always love and caring. It's more hate, crime, sex, being evil to others. So these kind of things is driving the social media platforms. And they know who they who chooses, and they don't give us the algorithms. That's why. And if we look at AI now, which comes into this, I think one thing we have as traditional journalists, we have an advantage, because AI is not really intelligent. I mean, they're not really smart. They're very fast. AI is very fast. And it can sum up things very quickly. But it doesn't really reflect what it's giving out. So I think the one chance, which is in journalism, traditional journalism, is that what it all started about. It's about going out and getting the story. And this AI cannot do this. Yeah. You cannot send AI to a mine where there's an environmental problem. They will just collect whatever is in the internet, all the fake news, everything which is in there, and the real news. So I think it's good if you want to really know something to rely on traditional brands of journalism as DW.
For this one, I'll ask the journalists with journalism background. I know you'd have that as bloggers, because you blog as well. How can we use AI to counter the deep fakes, the AI-generated stories, the AI-generated news? Because we have AI now. We're in this revolution. How can we use it for good?
Things are changing. Like, the world is changing. We have shorter attention spans now as individuals. I am not waiting for 19 hours to watch the news when I can pick up my phone. And because it's AI, for instance, I'm obsessed with TikTok. My For You page, my algorithm is perfect in that it shows me the kind of content that I like, the kind of news that I'd like to read or what I'd like to listen to. So what we have to do is we need, as journalists, I'm saying as journalists, I'm not practicing, but I am a journalist, you know. As journalists, what we need to do is, as Richard said, we need to combat these things that are there. AI needs to be put into our work. For instance, if you are creating content or news items for social media, why aren't we utilizing AI to create graphics that go with our stories that make them a little bit more exciting? Why do you have to start every story with the most blasé, the most boring, the most unoriginal catchphrases? Why don't you come up with different ways of coloring things so that even the news does not have to be the news? When I was younger, when you hear the news, you'd be like, ugh. But now that I'm older, I want the news and I want young people to understand the news. But it's up to us as bloggers, as journalists, to ensure that we add a little bit more creativity into how information is presented. That does not mean that we have to alter the truth. What it means is that we have to use what's currently available to us to make a better product that can be more realistic, more entertaining. It's not a DJ booth, more entertaining, but also really catchy with younger audiences, so that, especially when it comes to traditional media, if we use these AI tools, it's going to be easier for people not to go to bloggers who are not fact-based, but rather go back to traditional media.
As the broadcaster who has made it possible for us to have this very podcast, what are your closing remarks?
Well, first of all, I think it's great that we had this discussion and that we had the possibility. But I would say that I don't want to be in total opposition to what you said, but I say, Reverend, the experience shows that every media in the world that has been created still exists. So I wouldn't say that television is dead or radio is dead. Printing, you mentioned it. It's the books, they are still there. Yeah. When radio came up, everybody said, okay, this is the end for newspapers. They are also still there. They're diminished. They're small. When television came, everybody said, the radio is gone. Okay, now everybody wants TV. When the internet came, they said, TV is gone. Still operating. So many people are still watching. And you mentioned lazy kids. There are lazy kids. I don't believe in lazy kids, but I believe in lazy adults. So, and I mean, not everybody is trying to search every day on Netflix or whatever, on what platform, and the whole family is disputing, what are we watching today? No, we're watching, everybody watches in its own machine. Yeah. So I think at the end, there will still always be a reduced offer of television, a reduced offer of radio, but a huge, big, enormous, vast of the internet, which has to be regulated in a democratic way. This is very important. Don't let autocrats regulate the internet, because then we have ministries of truth, and this is not good. So I think democracy has to be the ones who are controlling the internet. That's my last word, and I think thank you.
Thank you so very much. It's been a beautiful conversation. Thank you for everybody who's joined us.
Many thanks to QTV's Talu Mukupa, who was speaking to Peter Limbok, Director General DW, Richard Mulonga, CEO of Bloggers Zambia, Stu Relatable, writer and poet, and Reverend Walter Mwambazi, author and digital marketer. That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a crucial part of our community, your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Your feedback can influence the topics we cover and guests we invite. You can find all of the Africa Link podcast episodes on Spotify and Apple, or wherever you get your podcast from. This episode was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabi. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW, made for minds.